is Emmanuel Ojo from Manitoba Agriculture, and he's going to present the Manitoba Mesonet Soil Moisture Monitoring. Please join me to work with him.
Thank you very much. I was going to start improvising and start presenting offhand without any PowerPoint, but I'm glad that it worked finally. Thanks for the introduction. My name is Timmy Emmanuel Ojo, and I work as the Agriculture Agronomy Specialist for Manitoba Agriculture. And I'm here to just briefly present about what we're doing right now with regards to the Manitoba Mesonet, and I'll be focusing more on the soil monitoring aspect of the weather network. My co-presenters are Lynn and Chris. Chris works with the Hydrologic Forecasting Group with Manitoba Infrastructure as well. So basically, I'd like to start with putting up this map for folks that don't really know where we are. Manitoba is just north of North Dakota, and Winnipeg is the main city in Manitoba, almost 700,000 people. And the agricultural region of the province is mainly to the south, or the south of the lakes. So this is where most of the network is and that I'll be talking about. The Manitoba Forest Reprogram also have the fire program that has weather station and weather network mainly in the forest region of the province to the north. But most of what we do pertains to agriculture, and that's why the Mesonet is mainly focused to the south of the province. And in terms of the justification, we have almost 10 different river basins that actually drain to the province. So the province collects most of the water that comes. Red River, for instance, you know, comes from the state. Actually, over 2/3 of the Red River is in the United States, but it flows northward and drains into Manitoba. For folks that remember 1997 flooding was actually a major one. We call it flood of the century in Manitoba, and we've got tons of flooding issues in Manitoba. The terrain also is one of those contributing factors, because Manitoba is one of the three prairie provinces, and the prairies is simply things that are so flat that if you lose your dog, don't worry about it. You're going to find it just by, you know, just looking out the window. So things are really flat. We don't have lots of undulating structure, topography at all. So basically, when you have water, the water sits on the field for days and days and days without flowing anywhere. And the slopes are just really minimal. And the other thing about the terrain as well is such that we do have snow melt in the spring, and almost every year we have seasonal flooding in the spring due to snow melt. And finally, as well, the industry, we have some big giant potato industry in Manitoba, Simplot, McCain as well. So when they had wanted to start to put the facility in Manitoba, some of the questions they were asking was, do you guys have enough heat units for potato production? What's the frost-free period in terms of the duration between the last frost in the spring and the first frost in the fall? Do you have enough green degree days? And so the first few stations that were installed was actually as a result of answering those questions in terms of calculating the green degree days that we have. So in terms of the historical perspective of the Mesonet, we started in 2005 with having just this simple single stand weather station that collects the primary information, just the rain gauge, tipping bucket. We collect temperature and humidity data, and that's all. And that's what this program started with. Then 3 years later, we added a few more sensors, the wind speed and direction. Then we decided to actually have a redundancy in the tipping bucket rain gauge. So we had dual tipping bucket rain gauges. So the program have been evolving over the last decade or so. And in 2010, we decided to move to the world WMO standard of having wind speed and direction monitored at 10 meter height, 30 feet. And then we also included a pluvial, which is the all-season weather precipitation. And the tipping bucket is only useful for the 5 months in the summer, because we have about 7 months of things being really frozen. And then we decided to include, you know, the pluvial, which monitors all types of precipitation, snow, hail, rainfall. We included pyranometer for solar radiation as well. So we decided to standardize all the stations in the network starting in 2010. I joined the program about 2 years ago, and my expertise is in soil moisture instrumentation, and I was able to convince the government to also, I would say, include soil moisture monitoring as part of what we do. And why do we need soil moisture monitoring as part of the network? Actually, this was the pie chart from the Manitoba Agriculture RAS Service Corporation. They're actually the leading, it's a crown corporation, and they provide insurance to farmers. And 97% of the causes of losses last year was actually based on excess moisture. And this is not just a one-time off. In the last 8 years, we've actually had half of those, 50% of the last 8 years, we've had excess moisture of over 70% as the major loss of preceding causes of losses. And actually in 2010, we had over 95% of the losses recorded was due to excess moisture. Going down the historical lane over the last 50 years, actually the combined effect of excess or deficit soil moisture is actually over 70% as well. So in some years we have excess, which is typically the most common type of losses, but we've also had deficit as well. So when you combine those two effects, it's either we are at the other end, at the end of the spectrum in every year. Hardly do we get a normal year. And in 2011, we had the Assiniboine River flooding really bad. And the government had a task force that reviewed the flooding issue. It actually cost the government over about $1.2 billion in terms of compensation to farmers, in terms of payout. And so when the report was released in 2013, a year and a half after, one of the major recommendations was that there is a need to have additional soil moisture measurement sites to fill the gaps in the major river basins. And then I was doing my research in soil moisture, and that was such a perfect combination because I was just about finishing my PhD project at the time, and the government needed someone to lead the program in terms of soil moisture monitoring for the province. And it was just the perfect opportunity. So just before I defended my thesis, I started working with the province in terms of including soil moisture monitoring with the Masonites. Part of the research I did was we got some funding from the province to look at which instruments would be best suited for our province. There are tons of instruments out there that we can simply just pick out of the box. And we decided to pick these five instruments to test and monitor and find which of these we would be best suited for us. And we have a paper that I published about 2 years ago in the Soil Science Side of American Journal that actually goes into details of this result that I'll be showing you. The study site actually had about 70% clay because we do have the Red River clay to the east of the province that typically has over 70-75% clay content. And oftentimes, most of the soil moisture monitoring sensors that we've used over time, they often perform really well in sand and maybe in loam soils. But once you start getting to the clay soils, because of the electrical conductivity, it just throws things a wire, so to speak. So basically, we decided to test these five equipment on a heavy clay soil, and we had the wet, moist, and dry. So the dry simply had a rain shelter over it. And this was the setup. The two line sensors from Centec, which are the EnviroScan and the Diviner, we monitored those and then have three rings around them. So the average of those three rings actually gave us what the observed soil moisture is. And then each of the three prong based sensors, so the Theta Probe, the Echo EC2, and the Stevens Hydro Probe as well, we used the direct measurement. We insert them in the soil, take the reading from the sensor itself, then do the gravimetric conversion. In terms of the results, the Hydro Probe actually had the best R square. We had about 50 samples collected at two different depths. The depth didn't really create any difference at all in the results when it was analyzed. We had at 15 and 30 centimeter depth was what we did. The R-square at Hydro Probe was the best. However, the other statistical indicator actually wasn't really good. Now, this table is based on the pre-calibration. So pretty much we used out-of-the-box calibration. For the Hydro Probe, out-of-the-box is loam default calibration. So we did not change anything. We just simply unboxed the instruments and then put them in the soil. The Theta Probe actually had the best pre-calibration result at 0.02 root mean square error. But then post-calibration, we divided the data set into two and then used one aspect to develop a calibration and then compared that calibration equation on the second aspect. And the hydro probe was actually the best in terms of post-calibration. After calibration, the hydro probe reduced the error from 0.129 to 0.014. And then it was actually surprising, the mean bias error was like zero. So, but then I would say the Theta probe did not really see any significant improvement because pre-calibration was okay, and then post-calibration, just a slight improvement, and then followed by the echo as well. The Diviner and Enviroscan, I would say just somewhere there, but that's not the end of the story. When you take a look at this graph, the pre-calibration are the circles, and then the post-calibration are the crosses. Both of the Enviroscan and the Diviner, the line sensors, seem to have a bias towards the dry side. And part of what we noticed was that when we look at the dry soil, because they are clay, very heavy clay, it cracks. And when we take sample for calibration, we definitely can't sample in the holes. So pretty much, it's as if that the calibration we did for this line sensor are actually not, I would say, as great as they could be, because we try to avoid the cracks in the soil, because we can't, you know, monitor cracks with the core samples that we are collecting. So I would tend to say, although cracks are common practices, what you would see in clay, but they don't really reflect a very good calibration that we did. So we felt that the calibration we did for the line sensor weren't as good as they could have been. And probably that's why we are seeing the result that we've seen in terms of the calibration result for those line sensors, the Diviner and Enviroscan, not being as great as they could have been. For the other prong-based sensor, again, the Theta probe, pretty much where the solid line was the pre-calibration, and then the dotted dashes are the post-calibration. So pre-calibration for Theta probe, still great, and then post-calibration didn't really make much changes. And the biggest change that we observed, as I've shown in the table, was in the hydro probe. Pre-calibration, quite okay, but not accurate. Precision-wise, it's good, but not accurate. But then after calibration, pretty much line up with the one-to-one line. So we presented these results to the province and told them, you know, if you guys want to do calibration, and you pretty much would be maybe good to go with the hydro probe. But if you're not interested in calibration, you want to use off-the-box instruments, then maybe the Theta probe would be the best to use. So basically, that's what the province decided to do, because again, the number of stations we've been having over the last few years have been increasing, as shown in the graph. 2014, we only had about 46 weather stations, and over the last 3 years, we've actually improved. And this year, actually, 2 weeks ago was when we built the last station for this year, and we are at 109 weather stations across the province right now. And we are monitoring soil moisture at 5 and 20 centimeter depth, as well as 50 and 100 centimeters depth as well. So 4 different depths of soil moisture monitoring. And one of the things that my job is also to create some public awareness. And so this is just a snapshot of what the web page looks like to show the current condition. The page updates every hour. Farmers, everyone can go on the page to see what is happening at the various location. And we included the soil moisture data as well. Although we included a little note to let people know what this information is, we present it in form of the volumetric water content. But oftentimes people ask us, what the heck is volumetric water content? You know, to a farmer, they are seeing 25%, and they say, well, 25%, that's really low. My soil isn't as low as that. But then it's not a percentage out of 100. And part of what we have started doing is actually to include a qualitative analysis to let the farmers know, well, if you see a number, what does that mean? What does that number mean? Is it adequate? Is it dry? Is it very wet? And then we're also producing the soil moisture maps as well. This is just a snapshot of the maps I've produced over the last month, 3 different weeks. And then again, it's like what Scott presented on a few minutes ago. This is mainly driven by precipitation, but again, it gives, I would say, a generic perspective over the province, what is happening in terms of soil moisture. So the next step that we're looking at is sensor durability. Most of these sensors, especially the soil moisture sensors, even the one we are using, have not been tested in a cold region. Winnipeg, I would say most areas in the province of Manitoba, we have about 6 months worth of frozen soil. And so we are planning to do some sensor durability tests to see how durable are these sensors in a cold region. And spatial analytics as well. We are hoping that to tie in into some of this map data as well. We have a very excellent, I would say, soil capability and productivity map across the province. And we are looking at, can we use some of these map soil drainage and soil hydrologic data to tie into some spatial analytics as well. And finally, looking at industry requirements, you know, looking at irrigation requirement, crop water demand, can we have some of these equipment and some of these sensors giving us some very cool information about that? And with that, we'd want to end the presentation. Thank you very much for listening. It's all in agriculture. 95% agricultural land and about 5% in native grassland. So pretty much we work with farmers and tell them we are interested in putting up a weather station. Would they agree? And for the most part, they would say yes. I think about 5% are irrigated in potato growing areas. Yeah, about 5%. They are beside the crop, so the sensors are always at the edge of the field such that it's away from the farmer's big equipment and to just make sure we don't have damages to the equipment. So they are just at the edge. Some farmers, we have agreements with them. They would help us to seed around the station, and some would just keep it in grass and we go out to mow the grass.